Welcome back to Blocked and Muted with Jim Suhan. I am Jim Suhan. This is TalkNorth.com. Our producer, Brandon Morton, is the other voice you will hear in the first half of the show. Second half of the show, Rachel Banham, former Gopher star, now WNBA standout, is going to be on with us talking about her engagement to Andre Hollins. One of the coolest sports moments of the year was Andre surprising her with a proposal. So stay on for that. It's a nice conversation with Rachel, who's, as you know, a very nice person. Now let's get to the two-minute drill, some of my favorite tops of the week. And before we get to Brandon grilling me mercilessly on these topics, I will just say this, that we had a very interesting window into NFL media this last few weeks. To me, it was always obvious. If you're going to fire Mike Zimmer, you were also going to fire Rick Spielman. And if you're going to remove Rick Spielman from a personnel job, you weren't going to give him some other nebulous, weird job in the organization. And you weren't going to keep him in a position where he's going to be meddling with personnel because you just fired him from personnel. So, and you know, I think the rumor began with Jeremy Fowler. He used to work with St. Paul Pioneer Press. Now he's with that, you know, he's with ESPN, and there's a hive of NFL reporters who all seem to kind of report exactly the same stuff, and it's just a matter of who has it 5 seconds before the others. And I'm not really picking on Jeremy specifically here. I'm just talking about the mentality here and the way it affects people who are trying to keep up with news. This might be instructive to you if you're trying to keep up with the Vikings hires. Don't believe everything you read. Make sure you pay attention to people who deliver the goods, not necessarily the fastest, but who provide logic and who are accurate in their reporting. And, you know, whether it was Jeremy or somebody else, they floated the idea that, Spielman might, you know, he might end up this cushy job as kind of an advisor to the Wolves. Never made any sense. Never made any sense. I don't think it was ever going to happen. So I also commend the Wolves. I think they did the right thing. It was time to move on. You can hear a further breakdown of the Viking situation on either the Viking Update show with John Krasinski or Jeff Diamond's Vikings and NFL Insider. Jeff, of course, former NFL general manager, Vikings general manager, can really break these things down well. I'll just say it didn't make any sense. The Wolves did the right thing, and now they face maybe the biggest test of their ownership. They should have the wherewithal at this point of their ownership tenure to be able to make good hires. I'm not sure we could say that before. And, you know, Spielman made the Zimmer hire. So now it's on the Wolves to really, for the first time, hire a general manager from outside their organization who can set them up to win, who can hire a good coach, who can build a good coaching staff, which the Vikings did not have this last year, who can make the right decision on Kirk Cousins, who can take a pretty talented roster and fill in the blanks that need to be filled in. So this isn't any longer just a mediocre NFC team. So this is the test. Can the Wolves do it? Can they listen to the right people? Can they surround themselves with the right intelligent NFL operators? Can they listen to the right people? I don't, you know, they have to prove it. They, just like athletes have to prove it every day, every Sunday in the NFL, they have to prove that they're good at this. I'm going to be fascinated to see who they choose. And this will kind of lead into our two-minute drill here. The easiest way for an NFL owner or an NFL general manager to make a mistake is to preset expectations or to hire or decide not to hire a type. Think about it. Most NFL teams do not hire the same kind of coach they just fired. Mike Zimmer, gruff, old defensive coach. So you're telling me if Bill Belichick was available to the Vikings right now, they wouldn't hire him because he's a gruff, old NFL defensive coach? No, you need to hire the best coach. And that best coach might be Brian Flores, who just got fired from the Miami Dolphins. So it's a real test of discipline. It's a test of intelligence. It's a test of operating ability. I'm going to be fascinated to see what the Wolves do.
We've praised them as owners throughout their entire, you know, tenure of being owners, spending the money in the right ways. Let's see if they make the proper decision this time.
Yeah, and the Wolves tend to not like me because I have not praised them a lot, like a lot of other people. I do think they spend plenty of money. I think they know how to operate. I think they've generally shown class in their dealings with social justice and dealing with their players. So I do give them credit on a number of fronts. I've never really given them credit as football operators, though, and that's where they're going to have to convince me now.
All right, well, then let's start the two-minute drill off, Jim, with less, one S is more, question
mark. Yes. And hey, I want to thank some of our sponsors across TalkNorth.com. We continue to grow the network. Our listens are way up. We keep adding great advertisers. Thanks to Karen Cleary, our sales executive. Thanks to Brandon for holding this whole thing together. Thank you for listening. Thanks also to some of our sponsors like Cara Quinn. She's my realtor. Head Flyer Brewing, Pizza Luce, Tuttle's, Eat Play Bowl, Tin Cup Whiskey, Ruther Toyota, TSR Injury Law. We have a million sponsors. I'm not going to mention them all. I just want to say thank you for helping us grow. Now let me get to it. So Les Frazier is a fascinating case here. He probably got fired too quickly. He actually got Christian Ponder to the playoffs. The roster fell apart the next year. They fired him. It was the easy thing to do. But I think it's also very instructive. Not only do NFL teams not hire enough black head coaches, they fire the ones they do hire too quickly. Mike Tomlin is the aberration. He is the one black head coach with job security. He has stayed on the job a long time. And guess what? He rallied that team to like 9 victories and got them in the playoffs this year. And that team is no good. He's won a Super Bowl. Of course, he was a great hire. So why don't more teams hire black head coaches? And why do they fire them so quickly? Jim Caldwell is the best coach the Detroit Lions have had in the last 40 years. Maybe 30. Okay. It depends if you want to give Wayne Fonts a lot of credit. At very least 25. And they fired him when he had a 36-28 record, far better record than the people before him, far better record than the people after him. Les Frazier got fired, and they replaced him with another defensive coach. And Mike Zimmer had his run. He had a good run. He almost went someplace in 2017. Mike Zimmer was a good NFL head coach, but Les Frazier was kicked out too quickly. Lovie Smith is the best Bears coach Chicago has had since Mike Ditka. And they fired him after a pretty good – when he was still winning games. It not only – listen, there are 32 NFL teams. 70% of the players in the league are black. A huge percentage, a high percentage of the best coordinators in the NFL are black. And 6% of the coaches in the NFL, head coaches, are black. And one of them might get fired, David Culley in Houston. And he actually did a good job under terrible circumstances this year. So as I wrote earlier this week in Star Tribune, you want to make a good hire, go to where the market is not capitalizing on high-end assets. There are good black coaches out there who deserve jobs, who would do a good job, who aren't getting a shot. That's the easiest way to win here.
Well, that leads up to our next subject on the two-minute drill, discrimination.
Yes, and here's where I'm going to respond to a lot of the emails I get anytime I write about race, the NFL, and hiring black coaches. The response is always something like this. They should just hire the best head coach. Well, guess what? When you go in with that mindset that you're just going to hire the best head coach, it's so easy for white owners and white general managers to hire somebody who reminds them of Joe Gibbs or Bill Belichick or Tom Landry or Chuck Knoll. That's what Tony Dungy always used to tell me when he was trying for a head coaching job in the 90s when we talked a lot. He'd say that, you know, NFL head owners aren't racist. They just want to hire somebody who looks like the guys that they're used to seeing on the sideline. And I'd always say, Tony, that is racist. They're looking to hire a white person who looks a certain way. Of course it's racist. So that is where the barrier needs to be broken down. It's discriminatory to hire somebody because of they look one way or because they don't look a certain way. It's discriminatory to assume that people who have one characteristic, whether it's race, creed, religion, color, are not as likely to succeed as those who have more traditional, more common traits. In other words, if you get used to hiring white coaches, you're going to keep hiring white coaches, and the best black coaches are not going to get a shot. That's discrimination. It just is. And the emails I get are so obviously racist. In some of them are so obviously racist, they're disgusting. But then there's the category where they think that if you just keep doing the same things, that somehow things will just magically get better over time. Things don't magically get better over time. You have to make them happen. So I think the Wilfs should hire a black coach this time around. I think some of the best coordinators, some of the best candidates are black. It would be an easy thing to do. They should also consider black general managers. I don't know who the right person there is. Maybe it's Morocco Brown. Maybe it's Louis Riddick. There are great candidates out there. Take advantage of them.
I just feel like it's a disservice to not hire these great black offensive coordinators from the NFL with actual years of NFL experience and hire a white head coach from a college team who has had no proven NFL experience whatsoever.
Yeah, and Eric Bieniemy might be the guy. It might be Brian Flores. It might be Les Frazier. It might be Byron Leftwich, which it might be Todd Bowles. I mean, there are just so many great candidates. I just think you're admitting something if you don't hire one of them.
Next up on the two-minute drill, we have NHL, old school or ancient school?
So Kirill Kaprizov, one of the best players in the league, the best player for the Wild, one of the most entertaining players in the league, the rare hockey player you actually pay money to go see specifically. Not just going to the game for the atmosphere because you're a fan of your team. That's a guy you would go out of your way to see. He is vital to what the NHL is trying to become and what the NHL has become in many ways over the last decade or so. Fast, entertaining, high-scoring hockey. He's the kind of guy you want. So what happens the other game? You let some thug ram him from behind, and guess how the NHL fixes that? You send Foligno over there to punch the guy in the face. Now, and everybody gets excited. Everybody taps their stick. Everybody acts like justice has been served. Justice has not been served. First of all, what if you sent Foligno over there and Foligno gets his butt kicked? It's like leaving it up to the marshal to win the showdown in the streets in the Old West. Well, what if the marshal gets shot in the head? It's not a fix. It's not justice. It's just making yourself feel macho. What should happen when some thug rams Kirill Kaprizov or somebody like him from behind or takes a cheap shot, takes a great player off the board, that player should be out for a month. That player should be fined heavily. That organization should be fined a draft pick. There has to be a real legislative, organizational fix. There has to be some way that actual justice is served. Leaving it up to people to punch each other in the face is not justice. It's not an organized way to deal with a systemic problem. It's no way to keep your players safe, because somebody else might go punch Foligno out and nothing will have been accomplished. The NHL has made so much progress in the way the game is played. They've made no progress in their mentality.
I feel like it's like old playground schoolyard justice where
exactly.
If my
buddy can beat up your buddy, then I win. Well, guess what? My nose is still broken.
Yeah, and the kid's going to pick on me tomorrow. it's not solving a problem long term.
It's not solving a problem. It is, and also, we are in the age where we know what concussions do to people, what kind of long-term damage is caused by brain injuries. You have two guys go punch each other in the face 8 times. You're not solving anything. You're actually creating problems. You might actually be damaging one of those people's lives.
It hardly seems like worth the revenge.
Yeah.
Last up on the two-minute drill, we have, football is king.
So football, in part because of brain injuries, in part because of the serious injuries you see happening, in part because college football doesn't take care of their players, watching football can make me feel guilty. You know, I feel like, oh, my God, that guy speared that guy. That guy just got hit in the head. That guy might, have serious problems the rest of his life because he was out there trying to entertain me. It does make me feel guilty at times. It's still the best sport. It's the best sport to write about. It's the best sport to analyze. It's the best sport to watch. And we were reminded of that this weekend. Sunday night, Raiders and Chargers, incredible drama. With more storylines than you can cover in a week, including the timeout and the Raiders and two teams that could have played for a tie and end up not playing for the tie. Dramatic drives. Incredible third and fourth down conversions, great talent, great athletes, incredible stuff. And then Monday night, Georgia rising to the top of the college football world by beating, another great Alabama team in a comeback with, basically this long shot quarterback and making these dramatic plays. I'm going to feel guilty, but I'm still going to watch because it's still the best sport to watch. All right, coming up next, my conversation with Rachel Banham from the Minnesota Lynx, from the University of Minnesota. Like I said, just one of the coolest sports moments we've seen in a while, at least for my book. We're going to talk to Rachel about it. As promised, this week's guest is Rachel Banham. You know her, of course, Lakeville star, Gopher star, and a continuing contributor to the Minnesota Lynx. But Rachel, the first thing I want to talk to you about is the proposal. I just thought that, sports world can be a rough place. I just thought that was a great moment. Will you take me back to when you and Andre first met?
Yeah. So we met freshman year of college. So what was that, 2011? My gosh. Mm-hmm. That's scary. 11 years ago. Anyways, we met our freshman year, you know, just athletes on campus. You know, he played on the men's team, obviously played on the girls team. So we met then, but then we didn't start dating until our sophomore year. So 2012. So yeah, but it was kind of funny because everyone was like, you know, he's the star basketball player on that team. You both were number one. You guys should date. And I was like, ew, that's weird. And then here we are.
That's fantastic. And if you would take me through the proposal, did he sucker you a little bit?
Oh my gosh. Yeah. So I know if anyone watched that video, I'm just absolutely out of control, just chaotic energy. But I was truly shocked because I'm thinking I have this interview for the NCAA Final Four stuff, right? So I'm like, cool, let me get this interview done because I had a really long day. Like, I was so tired. Anyone who knows me, when I'm sleepy and hangry, like, it's not good. So I was like pretty crabby. I was like, okay, I gotta do this interview. I had to like dress like a girl and be all cute, and I didn't want to do that either. So it was just one of those days. And I'm doing this interview and I'm on the last question. Noah, the guy who's filming, it's like, okay, last question, you know, talk about your jersey. And then Dre came up behind me and tapped me, and I was like, oh, that's when I was like, Dre, what are you doing? I'm trying to finish this interview. So he tapped me, and it surprised me. And then I saw my sister and my best friends in the background. I was like, oh, something weird's going on. And then that's kind of when I cued in on what was happening. It was cool. He did a great job.
Yeah, no, that was great. I thought it was fantastic. And like, when did you two start getting serious? When did you think this is a possibility?
I think kind of like we always felt this way. I mean, we've talked about getting married forever. I mean, we're young, like sophomore year, what, we're 21? No, not even. Oh my gosh. Like 19 years 20, old. Yeah. So, I mean, we've always like right away, like we just had such a good connection. So we've always talked about marriage, but you know, you got to kind of make it through those college years. And we dated for 5 years. We broke up for like a year and a half while he was overseas. And we kind of just took a break. And then when we got back together, 3 years ago now, we knew it when we got back together, like, okay, like this is what we want. This is who I want to be with. So we've known for a while.
Do you both plan on spending your life in basketball, or do you have other interests that might come into play?
Yeah, I think we always will be involved in basketball in one way or another. I definitely want to coach. He wants to dab a little bit in coaching, but he also is doing stuff, financial, like he's getting his MBA in finances. So he's doing stuff with that, but we definitely always want to kind of be involved in basketball in some way for sure. Even just running camps together would be really cool.
Yeah. Hey, have you talked to a Lindsay Whalen since her appendectomy?
I have, because I texted her yesterday, asking if she'd be at the game because they played Maryland yesterday. And she said, no, she's still resting. So it was a brief conversation, but I've been checking in on her just to see if she's all right, but she should be back soon. So looking forward to that.
And as I said, you grew up in Lakeville, you played in Lakeville, you've been a Minnesota basketball player pretty much your entire life. Was that a plan, or is that just the way it worked out?
I've always wanted to stay in Minnesota. So I think it was kind of a plan, and it also just worked out really great. But I knew, like, and when I was at Lakeville, I wanted to play at Minnesota. I wanted to be a Gopher no matter what. After that, I, like, you don't get to decide where you get drafted to. So that's obviously hard. But I knew at the end of the day, I wanted to come back to the Lynx if that was going to work out. And luckily it did. So I'm happy to be back here.
Now I'm going to bore you with old man stories. I did coach a lot of youth basketball in Lakeville, and I knew your parents. And I remember seeing you when you were about knee high. And I just want to know, how many coaches like me did you roll your eyes at because they're trying to coach you and you already knew more basketball than they did?
I would never roll my eyes at you.
Oh, you would. I deserve it.
That's so funny. No, I wouldn't roll my eyes, but probably deep in the back of my head, in my mind, I'd be like, well, what's this guy talking about?
Exactly. And that would be the right response. That would absolutely be the right response.
Yeah.
What has been the most rewarding aspect of playing so much basketball and living so much of your life in Minnesota?
Oh gosh. I think just like being able to be around family always. That's been such a blessing. I get to see my family, and like my whole family's in Minnesota. So that's really cool. Being around my friends and just being in the world of basketball, you get to just meet really great people and you get to make such cool connections. Like I have best friends for life through basketball. And you know, I had the the privilege to meet Kobe Bryant. Like, basketball did that for me. So I just have been really lucky with that.
Last question for today. Thanks again for joining us. What did you think of Cheryl Reeve becoming the coach of Team USA?
I think it's a no-brainer. I was super happy for her. Come on. What other option? I mean, obviously mm-hmm. there's other amazing coaches, but Cheryl absolutely deserved that. I couldn't imagine picking anybody else. So, and she's going to be great. That team's already insanely good, but she can even take them to another level.
Hey, great stuff. Thank you, Rachel, and congratulations.
No worries. Thank you.